All right, everyone, welcome to the Bills Breakdown Podcast. I am Nate Schreiber.
And I am Alex Pollinger.
And we're here to give our thoughts on the generally on the Buffalo Bills, other football, little football tidbits we hear and see throughout the season. I'm going to start today by talking about the AFC Championship game that just ended about 20 minutes ago. So, Alex, what did you think about the way, especially the second half in that game went?
You know, I thought Jacksonville kind of ran out of things to do. They stopped running those play-action plays that seemed to work really well in the first half and seemed to allow Belichick to adjust and kind of just do their thing. And, you know, when Blake Bortles is your quarterback, that's the result.
Yeah, it kind of reminded me a lot of how the Buffalo Bills were all season with when they had the scripted play calls in the first half with Rick Dennison. The Bills always seemed, especially the first three, four drives, to really do some cool things. Like the Jaguars ran a couple of those option plays and were confusing the Patriots defense, and then the second half when Hackett had to go off script, they kind of got lost.
Yeah, and it seemed like they really went away from the run game apart from first down, where they just keep running those dive plays, and you can't put Blake Bortles in those third and long situations. He just doesn't have the arm for it or the accuracy. Apart from that one throw about 25 yards down the field on the sideline in the first half, other than that, you know, Bortles was pretty disappointing. I thought most of the yardage came from screen plays.
Yeah, it's kind of funny because Bortles probably played one of the better games of the season for him, and it still wasn't a great performance. The Jaguars are just that team that's a quarterback short of winning a Super Bowl. They are a little reminiscent of the 2000 Baltimore Ravens, who had Trent Dilfer, who was not a great quarterback and won a Super Bowl, but Tom Brady didn't exist then.
Yeah, I mean, I don't like to rip guys, but if you look at the other 31 teams, would any of them consider Blake Bortles an upgrade at quarterback? And I think the answer is no.
Yeah, so, I mean, I honestly wouldn't be surprised whatsoever if Blake Bortles was not the Jacksonville Jaguars quarterback week one of next season.
Yeah, and they have a lot of options. It's a good year for free agency for quarterbacks, and as well as the draft.
Yeah, for sure. And Jacksonville is, like we said, really one piece away from going all the way to the Super Bowl, and I'll definitely be interested to see what they do in the offseason. Because especially their defense, that's an all-time great defense, and that entire defense is going to be coming back next year, and it's a young, fast, athletic defense, and the last defense we've really seen that could do the things they did was probably the Seattle Seahawks of 4 or 5 years ago, and they had the benefit of having Russell Wilson as their quarterback and not Blake Bortles.
Yep, and you know, it's a quarterback-driven league. You don't always need that superstar quarterback, as evidenced by three of the four teams that are in the conference championship games, but you know, a decent one certainly helps, and I think that would have won them the game today.
Yeah, for sure, and it is a quarterback-driven league, and it's funny, the three of the four quarterbacks starting in the championship games are not what we would consider superstars, and I guess the Eagles you kind of give a little bit of a pass to because they did have Carson Wentz for the majority of the season before he went out with injury. But I'm definitely interested to see how the NFC championship game goes tonight and if the winner of that game is able to match up with the Patriots in the Super Bowl. I think Jacksonville's defense was the best chance of someone taking the Patriots down, though, in the playoffs this year.
Yep, I mean, I think you pretty much covered it there. The Jacksonville defense is historically great, maybe one of the three best defenses we've ever seen, apart from that 42-point performance of the Steelers last week. But it's just a shame for them.
It kind of puts into perspective the Bills' loss in the wild card game. The Bills were able to, I mean, they only scored 3 points on the defense, but the Jaguars manhandled the Steelers for the majority of the game, and similar with the Patriots, and the Bills were able to play them close, which kind of makes me feel a little bit better about that. Doesn't make me feel great, but a little bit better about the performance they put in the wild card game.
Right, so which brings us to our next question. What were your thoughts on the Bills' season generally? How did it shake out for you?
Well, I mean, from the preseason, even before they made a couple of those trades where they traded away Sammy Watkins and Ronald Darby, I didn't think they were going to be great this year. I thought maybe best case scenario was going to be similar to what they've done the past couple of years, win 7 or 8 games, kind of keep the fans interested and keep the playoff hopes alive into the beginning, middle of December, but not really be in the hunt at the end of the year. And so for me, they overachieved pretty significantly.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think the tank talk was, you know, a little unwarranted at the beginning of the year. People saying they're going to win three or four games. You know, you and I, we both had them around 7 or 8 wins, and, you know, they had a couple bounces go their way with that Atlanta game. And, you know, Andy Dalton's miracle 4th and 12 touchdown to Tyler Boyd. So, I mean, a couple different results in those games, and we're talking about an 18-year playoff drought, but things went their way.
Yeah, and that makes me a little bit hesitant to say they're going to be able to continue that success next year, but I think it's a great first step for Sean McDermott and crew in the first year in the Bills. And it's the first time in a long time I felt very confident in the future of the organization with the leadership, both the coaching staff and the front office.
Yeah, it finally feels like they're on the same page. So even though, you know, they might not make the playoffs next year, it feels like long-term, they actually have a plan. They're not coaching or managing the organization like they're fearing for their job, like it has been so often with coaches getting fired after every 2 or 3 years. It feels like these two are really going to get a chance to work together and put something together for the future.
Yeah, for sure. I definitely think that having the ownership finally kind of ripping it all apart and completely starting over was the way that needed to go. It's kind of the same thing they've been trying to do with the Buffalo Sabres, and it was really something that was necessary, and they ended up getting the results in year one that people probably didn't expect, and that just gives Sean McDermott an even longer leash than he may have had, and probably for the first time in I don't even know how long the Bills are going to have a head coach that is going to last longer than 3 years.
Right, and you know, around that time in the Saints and Chargers game, it felt like the whole season was going to come crashing down, like the year that they started 5-2 with Ryan Fitzpatrick and finished 6-10. You know, 3 straight blowout losses, but you have to give McDermott credit for righting the ship and salvaging the season to get to the playoffs.
Yeah, the starting Nathan Peterman did remind me a lot of when they gave Ryan Fitzpatrick that huge extension when he started 5-2, and then I think they lost 6 straight games after that. And it's a testament to McDermott and the coaching staff, and after the game where Peterman threw 5 interceptions and they got blown out, keeping them prepared and keeping them keeping their heads on straight when to go back out and win more football games after that.
Yeah, you know, I thought obviously the offense regressed majorly from 2016. And I think a lot of that had to do with the offensive coordinator change to Rick Dennison. You know, I can't remember the exact stat, but I'm pretty sure the Bills were first in the league in offensive touchdowns through week 16 of the prior year. And I think the problem was the volatility. You know, there's a lot of 3-and-outs with that, but it was kind of like the scheme change just really made the offense regress with, you could almost argue, better personnel.
The biggest thing to me was when switching from the power to the zone blocking scheme. The Bills had, with under Anthony Lynn and Greg Roman, they ran the power scheme and they had the best rushing attack in the NFL. And when they went back, when Dennison tried to implement the zone scheme, they just didn't really have the right players that fit in that scheme. And I mean, a little bit of testament to Dennison that he did switch to a more power scheme towards the end of the year, and that did get their running game back on track a little bit more. But trying to he tried to fit square pegs in round holes with the personnel that he had and the offense that he was trying to run.
And I think you have to give credit to McDermott and Bean for making the quick decision to move on from him. You know, it's a little bit different with coaches because there's that element of they see them as a peer. But I'm glad that they were able to get past that and, you know, make the better move for the organization's future. You can't trust, you know, a young quarterback to be developed by Rick Dennison.
Yeah, and fans were clamoring for Dennison to get canned as early as week 4 or 5 of the season, and it's very difficult to switch offense coordinators in the middle of the season. You can't really install a new offense mid-year, but it was definitely necessary to move on from him as they did.
So, what do you think of the Brian Daboll hire?
They were looking at new offensive coordinators, and you heard some of the names getting thrown around. You know, Mike McCoy, who was McDermott's first choice last year, He would have been someone. He was probably my first choice after Dennison got fired, and I at that point didn't really even know Brian Daboll was on the radar as a potential offensive coordinator. But it's definitely intriguing to me. He has NFL experience. He's been in charge of a few pretty putrid NFL offenses, but again, when he was. His quarterbacks were Seneca Wallace, Jake Delhomme, Matt Cassel was probably the best one that he had play for him. And he did have a ton of success at the college level this last year in Alabama. And I think he can probably bring some of those college schemes and college play designs to the NFL with him, like the run-pass options that he ran so successfully at Alabama this year.
Yeah, I agree. It's more. It was an outside-the-box hire, and it almost seemed like they kind of knew what they wanted. I mean, he was hired within 48 hours of Dennison getting fired. And, you know, even though he has the NFL experience, it was 4 or 5 years ago, and it appears that, you know, he's willing to change the offense based on personnel. And I think that's a little bit better than what they could have got with some of those quote-unquote retread guys like McCoy or Chudzinski, where they might not be quite as willing to adapt the players or adapt their scheme to the players as opposed to the other way around.
Yeah, that's one thing that Daboll actually talked about a lot in interviews he's given, that he looks at the opponent and looks at the players he has and builds his scheme around what he has and what he's looking at his opponent having. And that's a huge thing that the Bills just did not have this past year with Rick Dennison. They tried to do the same things every single week, regardless of opponent and regardless of the players they had. Like Tyrod Taylor needs to be in a more college style offense to succeed and be able to move around and get outside the pocket to throw and have some designed runs. And it sounds like whether or not Tyrod Taylor is the quarterback next year, probably he's not going to be, but Brian Daboll's going to be able to come in and design an offensive scheme around the personnel that Brandon Bean gives him.
Yeah, and I think that's exciting because, you know, maybe they do decide to stick with Tyrod Taylor and draft a quarterback and keep Tyrod as the bridge. Maybe they decide to go elsewhere in free agency for a quarterback, or maybe they trade up into the top five. But I think the Daboll hire just gives them a lot of flexibility with what they can do at quarterback. So, and I think it's a good hire. Maybe not the best possible one, or maybe not my first choice, but I think it's a very good hire.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm definitely excited to see what he brings to the Bills next year and what kind of an offense they are going to have. I can say it's most likely going to be a vastly different offense than they've run any of the past 3 years, whether it was Greg Roman, Anthony Lynn, or Rick Dennison, who utilized a lot more pro concepts than anything else. And I think Dable's going to, in a kind of Chip Kelly-esque way, be able to bring some of those college concepts to the NFL. And you see a lot of the successful NFL teams running those college-type concepts, like the Philadelphia Eagles last week in the divisional series ran a few plays out of the wishbone, which was very interesting. You don't really see that too often in the NFL.
Yeah, and actually I saw a lot of the run-pass option play Jacksonville actually scored their first touchdown of the game on today. I couldn't help but think, you know, why didn't the Bills use more of that this year with Tyrod Taylor? Know, let him use his athleticism as a threat to hand the ball off, run himself, or throw to one of those big wide receivers in a red zone situation like that.
Yeah, and Blake Bortles is one of those guys. In college, he ran a lot of those run-pass options and played out of a spread offense where he did get the chance to run a lot and move outside the pocket, and that's where he is most successful. And you see that in the NFL, too. He, against the Bills in the wild card game, he ran for almost 100 yards, and a big portion of that was because the Jaguars were able to get him on the move outside of the fumble that he picked up and ran around the end for 20 yards and at the end of the game, which obviously was not a designed run, but that was what killed the Bills in that game was Blake Bortles being able to run the football, because they bottled up on Leonard Fournette for the most part, and Bortles couldn't throw to save his life. He threw for, I think, 88 yards in that game. So that's the kind of thing that you hope to see the Bills, especially if Tyrod Taylor is the quarterback or if they draft someone like Lamar Jackson, implement next year.
Yeah, and you mentioned the spread offense there for Bortles a lot that he ran in college too. And I think I remember seeing a stat at one point in the season, the Bills were averaging almost 5 yards a carry out of those spread formations. Yet it seemed like Dennison wanted to keep trotting out two tight ends, a fullback, and just in those obvious running formations. You know, it's a pass-heavy league now, so you have to at least provide that threat that you might pass the ball. So I think it's going to be refreshing with Daboll to see, you know, what he can do with their personnel, and quite frankly, to see what they have for personnel here in a few months.
Yeah, that's that kind of leads us into our next question here. What are the biggest question marks the Buffalo Bills have going into the offseason and into the 2018 season?
Well, I think the first and most obvious one is the quarterback position. You know, I've been one of Tyrod Taylor's biggest apologists for the last few years, but you know, 2017 was pretty dreadful. And I don't know if you can put it all on the quarterback. You know, the offensive line didn't adjust well to the new scheme. The offensive coordinator was leaving a lot to be desired, to put it nicely there, once they got off the scripted plays. So, you know, I'm not totally opposed to moving on from Tyrod Taylor, but I think it has to be done, you know, intelligently, get some value for it, trade him after the new league year begins, and, you know, get another draft pick or another player for him. I don't think you can just cut him.
Yeah, I agree. That's the one thing I don't want to see them do is just cut Tyrod to save the $6 million roster bonus. I think that if you can't find a trade suitor for him, it's better served to keep him on the roster going to next year, knowing that you have someone who is a serviceable NFL starter that can play if you want to draft a rookie and let him sit and learn for a year or two. The only exception to that, in my opinion, is if you can go get a guy like Kirk Cousins, then you probably are going to move on from Tyrod, whether or not you can find a trade partner for him.
Right. And, you know, we'll get into that in a future pod. We're going to break down the position groups. I'm not so sure about the Kirk Cousins things. I know we differ in opinion there, but there's a lot of good quarterbacks in free agency this year. Maybe not good, but a lot of decent starting caliber quarterbacks, you know, that might have been able to help the Jaguars get to the Super Bowl today, and they could be playing for the Bills this year or next year.
Yeah, and there's also guys like Alex Smith in Kansas City, who the Chiefs are looking like they're gonna try to move on from him next year, even though he's got one more year left on his deal, and go to Patrick Mahomes. And he's another guy who is probably going to be available once the offseason starts.
Right, and obviously this draft class has been hyped up for over a year now about the quarterbacks that are coming out. You know, we could probably spend a few pods on that as we get closer to the NFL draft, but you know, I think it's going to be pretty intriguing to see what the Bills decide to do with their draft picks, and you know, if they move up, if they stay put, even if they try to move up after those two first round picks to, you know, find some value on one of those fifth or sixth quarterbacks on the board.
Yeah, and that's a tough question they have to ask themselves, is what is a quarterback worth to them? If they have a guy that they know they want, is it worth selling the farm, so to say, in trading both of the first round picks when there's so many other holes and on the roster that they have to fill? Outside of the secondary and the left side of the offensive line, there's really not another safe position on the team in terms of guys know they have a job going next year.
Yeah, which brings me to the second thing I thought of when the biggest question marks going into the offseason. Who do you think is going to be the starting middle linebacker for the Bills next year?
I have a hard time seeing them moving on from Preston Brown. The only thing, he's going to be expensive. He's not at the level of an all-pro linebacker like Luke Kuechly, who's going to cost $12 million a year to keep, but he led the NFL in tackles this year, and he's probably one of the top five at least run-stopping middle linebackers in the NFL. And I would say he's going to be offered a contract somewhere in the $7-8 million a year range. And is that cost prohibitive for the Bills? Not necessarily, but do you want to spend that kind of money on a middle linebacker when there's a few middle linebackers in the draft, like Roquan Smith, that you could bring in, or you want to have money to spend on other positions that you think may be more important? It's tough to say. I do know in Sean McDermott's defense, middle linebacker is one of, if not the most important position on the field, and that's where Luke Kuechly did so well for him in Carolina for the last few years. So I would say that Preston Brown will be a Buffalo Bill next year.
I agree. I think he is going to be a Buffalo Bill. Ideally, I'd like to see him move to that strong side linebacker role, so he's more of a run stuffer, kind of playing the role that they wanted Lorenzo Alexander to be, but you know, didn't have a great season there. And I think, you know, if they can get a guy like Roquan Smith in the draft and move him to middle linebacker and put Preston Brown at strong side and Milano at the weak side, you've got a really strong linebacking core in that scenario.
Yeah, and but, Roquan Smith has everything, you know, everything you look for in a linebacker except for size, and that's something Preston Brown can kind of hide. He can take on those blocks for him and make sure Roquan Smith would be free to roam around and make plays, which is what he's made a name for himself doing in college.
Right, and Preston Brown, the one knock on him is, you know, a bit of a liability in pass coverage. You know, he made a few plays that kind of surprised you this year in pass coverage, but I just think they're in need of an upgrade, especially in McDermott's style of defense. Like you said, Preston Brown is no Luke Kuechly, but, you know, Roquan Smith might be the next closest thing to it that they can get for next year.
Yeah, and that's kind of one of the questions they have to ask themselves is, do they want to try and stay at 21, 22 and get a guy like Roquan Smith, who at least right now looks like he may be available down at the end of the draft? Who knows when, once the combine goes through and we get a little bit closer. But
right. Yeah, we know how much the rankings change. I mean, it's January 21st. We've got 3 months until the draft. You know, the quarterbacks are going to shuffle around in order. All these, you know, I think Smith might be the best defensive player in the draft, so his stock could even rise up into the top 5 or 10.
Yeah, that's just another one of the questions that we're gonna be looking for answers for over the next 2 months leading up to the NFL Combine and free agency. The next position that I think the Bills massively need to upgrade is wide receiver. Jordan Matthews is going to be a free agent. I can't see him being in the Bills uniform next year. I just don't see him wanting to come back to Buffalo. And beyond him, you have Zay Jones, who we just found out played the entire year with a torn labrum in his shoulder and wasn't really himself. And knowing that, I'm more than willing to give him another shot, so to say. I'm not going to hold it against him that he was playing hurt all year. And Deontay Thompson had a very good year for the Bills out of pretty much nowhere. And I can definitely see him being the number 3 or 4 receiver next year. But they need to find that true number one receiver, because Calvin Benjamin, to me, is at best a 1B kind of receiver.
Exactly. You know who would go opposite or best opposite Calvin Benjamin? Probably be Sammy Watkins. But, you know, they had to make that decision to trade him, and, you know, they got a pick for it. And, you know, Watkins is set to be a free agent, so, I mean, you never know. They really do need that 1A type receiver, though. I think that would help Benjamin so much in whoever the quarterback is next year and the run game.
Yeah, that's been one of the challenges the past 3 years, is the Bills have had such a great power running attack and can pound the ball on you for days, but when it comes crunch time, as you saw in the wild card game, Jacksonville could sell out to stop the run, and they're not going to beat you through the year.
Yeah, so which brings me to my my last big question mark is, who's starting at the cornerback spot across from Tre'Davious White?
I would really like to see E.J. Gaines be brought back next year. The two things that make it not a sure thing are cost. He had a great year when he was healthy. And there's going to be multiple teams that want him to play for them next year. He fits so well into the scheme the Bills run. It's just having a great player that's not on the field is just as bad as having a bad player that plays all the time. And can he stay healthy is the biggest question.
Right, and that's one of McDermott's biggest things is durability. Can that player, you know, be there almost every game for you to rely on them? I think Gaines played in 11 games, and I'm pretty sure they went 1-4 in the 5 games that he didn't play. So it really shows you how important he is to that defense. You know, and I think cornerback's going to be a spot that they really have to beef up in free agency and the draft, regardless if Gaines is kept on the roster or not, because the backups are just not NFL caliber players.
Yeah, Sharice Wright had a decent year in when he was in the nickel, playing as a nickel corner, but he just struggles when he has to play outside, especially the things that the Bills ask their cornerbacks to be able to do on defense in terms of reading the game and playing in those cover three zones, which is Tre'Davious White and E.J. Gaines both are so good at being able to drop back, keep the game in front of them, and read the play. And Sharice Wright just struggled in that category all year long.
Yeah, and so that brings us to the next point of what things are for sure with this roster next year.
The entire secondary, outside of the second corner position, I mean, Jordan Poyer and Micah Hyde both had unbelievable years. It's the best safety tandem the Bills have had in a very, very long time. Tre'Davious White, obviously, who kind of got snubbed in Rookie of the Year, that he didn't even make the finalists for that over Christian McCaffrey, which I still don't exactly understand how that happened.
That was a complete travesty.
Yeah, he won Pro Football Focus Rookie of the Year, and he should have been in strong consideration for NFL Rookie of the Year. This, given the season he had, teams didn't even throw at him the second half of the year, which just shows you how strong of a season he had. On the offensive side of the ball, Calvin Benjamin's going to be one of the starting wide receivers, and LeSean McCoy obviously will be back at running back. He's still a superstar. He'll be 30 next year, though, which you have to add another running back behind him. You can't just keep relying on him. He might have two great seasons left in him in his Hall of Fame career, but he's getting old. He's very old for a running back.
So you're saying you don't want to keep trotting Mike Tolbert out there on 3rd and 8?
There are so many. They had so many options. You could basically take any running back, any NFL caliber running back off the street that was a free agent, that then put them in that position and on third downs when they were trying to run like slants to Mike Tolbert out wide, and put them there, and he would do significantly better. I just don't understand. I mean, I understand why they brought Tolbert to Buffalo in the first place. The familiarity in the locker room, having him in the locker room as a leader. But as an NFL caliber running back, that's just not who he is.
Right. And, you know, with Brandon Bean making these kind of blockbuster trades, do you think LeSean McCoy is on the roster for sure?
I just can't see them moving on from LeSean McCoy. And I can't see another team wanting to pick up that contract. Are the two things that make me... I would say there's almost a 0% chance that they move on from him next year. I don't see another team wanting to spend that kind of money on a 30-year-old running back, even though it is LeSean McCoy.
Right, and we've seen the last couple of years how deep the running back talent is in the draft. You know, it seems like these running backs are almost a dime a dozen, at least decent ones. But like you said, LeSean McCoy is a superstar, and you know, there's only a handful of those guys in the NFL, so I think that's kind of the Bills' offense going forward for the next year or two.
Yeah, and you never know. What if they find a guy like the Saints found with Alvin Kamara in the draft next year? Or there are so many high-quality running backs that aren't going to get drafted in the first round or even the second round. There's maybe one guy that is a sure thing, and that's Saquon Barkley. He'll probably go in the top 3 or 4. But beyond that, there are tons of other running backs out there that are going to be coming into the league, and bring a few of them into camp, you never know what you're going to find.
Right, and I mean, Kareem Hunt and Alvin Kamara are both, I believe, third-round picks, and you know, they're breakout superstars the first season, so yeah, I think that's a position that they're definitely going to address in the draft. I think it's going to come, you know, maybe in those mid-round
picks. What do you think about
the
offensive line, especially the right side of the offensive line? I think the left side of the offensive line, at least for next year, is probably set. It's going to be Deion Dawkins or Richie Incognito, but the right side of the line... Jordan Mills is, I don't even get me started on Jordan Mills. He has his moments, but he sometimes just looks absolutely lost on the football field. And they brought in Vlad Dukas on a massive for a player of his caliber contract, and he did not perform to the level that we would have expected him to perform. And then you have John Miller, who is built to play that power running scheme, which the Bills really didn't run a lot this year, which could be part of why he didn't see the field.
Right, and you know, John Miller had that rough rookie season, but that second year he took a really big step and played pretty well for the most part. So I'll be, I'm intrigued to see if they go back to John Miller, if they stick with that power-based scheme, because he's not a really athletic guard. He's one of those big maulers, and I think he just fits well if they stick with that type of power run scheme.
And that's the case with Richie Incognito and Eric Wood as well. They're not, those guys aren't guys, Richie Incognito a little bit more so than the other two, but they're not guys you're gonna be pulling a ton and getting out in space trying to block guys in the open field. They're guys that they you wanna let them just go straight ahead and knock guys over and run the ball that way. And if they go back to the power running scheme, which I don't see how they won't with Brian Daboll, given the success they had with at the end of this year and the last 2 years, John Miller could be the starting right guard next year. And another guy that I'm curious what you think about is Chantrell Henderson. He came back from his suspension this year, didn't really play a ton of football after that, but he was a guy who in college was looked at as a potential first-round pick.
Yeah, I mean, I believe he's going to be an unrestricted free agent, correct? Or is he a restricted free agent?
That I think he's going to be an unrestricted free agent. I think they gave him the he accrued the amount of games or however much it needs, but I'm not 100% sure on that.
Yeah, but anyways, I think you can bring him in on an affordable contract. Even if he's not your starter at right tackle, I think that's a great depth player to have. And, you know, that's where the Bills kind of struggled this year, was with depth pretty much all over the field. And, you know, if you can get a guy on a cheap contract like Chantrell Henderson to be your backup, if he's not the starter, then I think it's a good player to keep on the roster.
Yeah, so he is an unrestricted free agent next year. He did accrue the amount of games that he needed to accrue, even with the suspension, to become an unrestricted free agent. So I would really like to see the Bills bring him back. He does have he obviously has a lot of talent. He was before everything happened with him. He was looked at as potentially a first round pick, and then he did play well for the Bills when he first was in Buffalo, and then his Crohn's disease and the multiple drug suspensions while he was trying to treat Crohn's disease kind of derailed his career. But he's only going to be 26 years old next year. He's not an old. He's just hitting his prime as an NFL as an offensive lineman.
Right, and the listeners are probably thinking, well, what about Cordy Glenn? You guys haven't mentioned Cordy Glenn at all. And with that, I think his cap number is going to be close to 14 million next year, or maybe a little over that. I just don't see how Cordy Glenn's on the roster next year.
No, and especially the way Deion Dawkins played this year, filling in for him at left tackle. Deion Dawkins is looks to me like a franchise left tackle, and looks like he's going to be the Bills' left tackle for the foreseeable future. And
Right.
there are
And if you've Sorry.
there are so many teams out there that could use left tackle. First one that comes to mind for me is Denver Broncos. That I don't see Cordy Glenn. I see the Bills finding a trade partner for him somewhere in the league.
Right. And a lot of those teams that need a left tackle are teams that need quarterback as well. So, you know, I don't see the tackle from Notre Dame, McGlinchey, I believe his name
Yes.
is. I don't see him going to a team like the Giants or the Broncos that early in the draft just because those teams need quarterbacks. So, you know, looking at the draft order, picks 9 through 12, I think, is like San Francisco, Oakland, Miami, and Cincinnati. And all those teams but Oakland could use a left tackle. So that's potentially a trade partner. The Bills only want to give up one of those first round picks and Cordy Glenn to move up.
Yeah, and especially the Raiders and the 49ers, those guys, they have franchise quarterbacks. And the Raiders probably need a corner more than anything else, but the 49ers need an entire offensive line. So, and Jimmy Garoppolo showed himself that he looks like he's going to be a superstar in this league. And as we learned from the Colts with Andrew Luck, if you have, even if you have the best quarterback in the NFL, if your offensive line can't block anything, what good is that?
Right. So I think as we get closer to draft time, we can definitely look at that 49ers spot at number 9. That's a very good possibility that the Bills could trade up to that spot if they really want a quarterback. But at the same time, I mean, there could
Yeah,
be five or six quarterbacks off
and
the board.
I really think that the if the Bills are going to trade up, you don't want to trade both those first round picks to move up.
Right, I
You want to be
completely
able to move up by trading one of those two picks and then some picks later on in the draft, or trading Cordy Glenn as part of the package.
Right, and this I haven't really done a deep dive on the draft class yet, but it looks like for the second year in a row, there's going to be some pretty good depth at a lot of positions falling down into the second, third, maybe even fourth rounds. So holding on to those extra picks could be really beneficial for them to, plug those holes that we were talking about.
What do you think about the Bills' defensive line going into next year? They did not generate the pressure that they needed to generate this year. Jerry Hughes is still Jerry Hughes, and he's going to get the hurries. He didn't get the sacks he got this year, but I still thought he had a very, very good season. But Shaq Lawson, to me, is not looking like a guy who's gonna be. He's a great run defender, and I'll give him that. But he's not looking like a guy who's gonna get you 8-10 sacks a season.
Right. He hasn't really lived up to that first round potential yet as it come when it comes to the pass rush. Like you said, him and Hughes are both great edge defenders for the run. The problems was really the interior with the defensive tackles. And I think defensive tackle is going to be an area where they're definitely adding, a semi big name in free agency or picking up someone in the draft early on.
Yeah, watching the Jaguars Patriots games today made me really miss Marcell Dareus. He was absolutely dominant in that game today. He is obviously surrounded by significantly more talent in Jacksonville, but when he played hard in Buffalo and when he wanted to play, which wasn't all the time, he is a superstar defensive tackle. He just didn't. After he signed that big deal in Buffalo, it just seemed like a switch turned off in him and he wasn't really interested anymore.
Yeah, that looked like 2014 Marcell Dareus out on the field today, just manhandling double teams, just blowing up the interior of the Patriots' offensive line, and it really showed in the first half and some of the third quarter. He kind of disappeared there in the fourth quarter along with the rest of the pass rush.
Yeah, so that, and especially defensive tackle, especially if Kyle Williams retires, which we don't know that what's going through his mind right now. But if he doesn't come back, that it becomes an even bigger need than it already is.
Right, and I think a guy like Dontari Poe, who's going to be a free agent if the Falcons don't bring him back, I think that's a great free agent signing here in a couple months if they can get Poe to kind of shore up that sort of nose tackle role, and then they can draft a more pass rush type defensive tackle.
Yeah, they really need a guy who can play that three technique like Dareus did when he was here. And Dontari Poe is one of those players. Another one who is going to be an unrestricted free agent next year is Star Lotulelei from Carolina, which is very interesting to me because that's where the entire Bills staff front office came from, and they have familiarity with him. And is he someone they might want to go after next year?
Right, we've definitely seen the Carolina connections with a lot of the decisions that Bean and McDermott have made. So I think that's a good possibility too. And if they don't bring back Preston Brown and EJ Gaines, maybe they're able to bring in both of those guys.
Yeah, so right now I think the Bills have about $32 million in cap space, and they can get that up to somewhere around 45 if Tyrod Taylor and Cordy Glenn both are gone, which gives them plenty of room to make a couple of moves like that and still leave themselves some cap space to sign those 1 year veteran minimum deals and rookie contracts. And that's another thing I think the Bills really need to get away from is having so many guys on those 1 year veteran minimum deals and become a younger football team. They were one of the older teams in the NFL this year, and for a team who is looks like they're going to be on the upswing, that needs to change.
Right, Andy. I think we're going to see a lot of turnover again, apart from, some of the names we mentioned. I wouldn't be surprised if there's only, 20 guys from this year's roster that are there on opening day next year.
That's something I'll look into is what is the biggest roster turnover in the NFL ever of a team coming off a playoff year, because I think the Bills do have a chance to come close to having the most rush turnover of a playoff team, given their age, their needs, and the coaching changes in the offensive side of the football.
Right. And we'll get into those deep dives of the different position groups here. I think next week's pod, we're going to break down all of the options they have at quarterback. So that'll be a fun show. We can, discuss Tyrod Taylor more in depth, take a look at the free agent quarterbacks, any potential trades they could make, and maybe do a little bit of a rundown of who they have in the draft, possibly.
Yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to that. It's gonna be a very fun offseason as a Buffalo Bills fan, especially given the excitement that is generated by the year they had this year. Offseason is a fun time in the NFL for any fan because everyone's record's 0-0 and everyone has the same chance going to the next year. But it's for the first time in a long time in Buffalo, there is a real sense of optimism for the future, which I'm thrilled to be able to say that. I don't think I've ever said that since I can remember being a Bills fan.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I was 6 years old the last time I watched a playoff game. You know, I'm 24 now, so it's great to have a sense of optimism. I know we're looking forward to being in the stands with our season tickets again next year. We've been season ticket holders since 2016, so 2 years now, and we're looking forward to it.
Yeah, absolutely. We are definitely looking forward to next year with the Buffalo Bills and everything else going through the rest of this offseason, breaking down everything the Bills need, want, and we think they should do. And we will get back into that next week when we talk about quarterback, as Alex mentioned. For now, this is the Buffalo Breakdown. I'm Nate Schreiber.
And I'm Alex Pollinger. You can reach us at BillsBreakdownPodcast@gmail.com and at BillsBreakdownPodcast on Twitter. We look forward to seeing any reviews that you have of the show. Leave us some reviews on iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts.